And welcome back to the Punk News Podcast for the week of October 8, 2013. We got a lot to talk about on this Punk News Podcast. We're going to be talking about quitting jobs and traveling the country. And so let's get this party started. And we are back on the Punk News Podcast. As always, this is the main man, features editor John Gentile. And we got a special guest here today, super special guest. I am here with the one, the only, the radiant, the ebullient, Britt Reiser.
Hey, yo!
Interviews editor. Britt, what's happening? What's happening?
Hey, how you doing?
Good, good. So, Britt, I hear that you recently gave the double bird to your boss and just walked out of the office.
I did. A week ago. Today. 1 week anniversary.
What happened? Like, was your boss like a dick or what happened?
My boss, to put it lightly, is a terrifying, controlling, harassing jerk. To put it lightly.
So, I mean, did you do it politely or did you like literally just walk out and say, I'm out of here. Screw you, man.
I did it politely. Mostly because my coworkers deserved the politeness and the goodbye and that like chance to say goodbye. She did not though. But you know, you can't be polite to like one group of people and then turn around and be a gigantic asshole to the other group. Does that make sense?
It does. I understand. Britt, so what is your specialty? I mean, do you design pharmaceuticals? Do you build buildings? Are you a nanny? Do you run guns for the Colombians? What do you do exactly?
Well, for anybody that's listening that wants to hire me, project management mostly in marketing. So it's really boring. Womp womp day jobs.
Marketing's a pretty sweet field, but there's a lot of whack jobs in there.
I mean, yeah.
I interned at an advertising firm during college. It was cool. And actually, that advertising firm was pretty low-key, pretty normal people. But in advertising, there's a lot of weirdos, a lot of high-strung people.
Yes, this is true. I actually have a lead for a job at an ad company out of Denver. So I'm crossing my fingers because I would love to be your overly paid, high-strung person. As long as the overly paid comes first.
Well, if you need a letter of recommendation, just ask. I've got a history of writing letters of recommendations, if I may cite Mikey Erg myself. And speaking of high-strung people, we've got a kicking podcast. On this podcast, we're going to be talking about Victory Records getting sued and suing people. Once again, we're going to be talking about NoFX's new release. We're going to talk about Bouncing Souls' annual Home for the Holidays shows. We're going to be talking about Lost Prophets breaking up because it should be evident while they're breaking up, but we'll talk about that later. We're also going to be talking about Ministry's new brand new comic book. We're going to be talking about Ice Age covering Sinead O'Connor. I bet you didn't see that coming, but no one saw it when Sinead O'Connor covered Prince either, so it's fitting. We're going to be talking about the Menzingers brand new album, and of course, we're going to be talking about our main homeboy, Mikey Erg. And on top of that, we got some sweetie, pretty sweet jams. We have a jam from a band called Pup, who Adam White is going to introduce. We have a jam from Toxic Holocaust out on Tank Crimes Record. And I think Britt Reiser is going to introduce our very first song of the evening. And of course, keeping all our songs and all our plates spinning in appropriate order in the right caboose, we have the one, the only, the synthetic, the legendary Sound Guy Nariman. Sound Guy Nariman, how are you doing on this evening?
Due to suspension of federal government services, we are unable to answer your call directly. If you need to report a workplace fatality, hospitalizations, or an imminent danger situation during normal business hours, please leave a message. We'll return your call as soon as possible.
Yep, that will be a band from San Diego called Casket. They just put out a new album this week, so check that out. It's out on their Facebook page, and the song is titled "Agoraphobia," and they have a video out for that. So go like them on Facebook, listen to their music, you know, do all that stuff that punk rock kids do in their punk rock communities to support one another.
Excellent. Let's check out the jam.
Agoraphobic, confined to the cell that built inside my head. I'm never going on the outside, ever.
debilitating fear. My self-security blanket warms as I know the end is here. So please don't take my pain away. It's all I got to keep me warm and safe. I'm a getting to go jam, it's fair to say. So put up the windows and lock the doors. I'm not going outside anymore. Unless I'm drag kicking and screaming, I'm staying indoors. There's a clock upon the nightstand, programmed to notify me of another day. The weather really doesn't matter when it's always cold and gray. Hit the snooze while I'm sleeping. I'm resting with just myself accordingly. Pace back and forth and down to entropy. Struggle till it's clean. Cause it's comfortable in here. Just me and debilitating fear. By self-help medicating my future's looking fucking clear. So please don't take my pain away. It's all I got to keep me warm and safe. I'm a ghetto's approach and it's fair to say. So pull up the windows and lock the doors. I'm not going outside anymore. Unless I'm track kicking and screaming, I'm staying indoors. I've lost my mind this time, I can't find it anywhere. I've lost my mind this time, it's somewhere, I swear. I've lost my mind this time. I've lost my mind this time, it's somewhere, I swear. I've lost my mind this time, I can't find it anywhere. I've lost my mind this time, it's somewhere, I swear.
Back on the Punk News Podcast. I hope you liked Casket. And we have got a very special podcast because not only do we have the resplendent Brent Reiser, but we're going to be giving a call to Andy Waterfield, news editor, while he's traveling North America. I'm not sure if he's in Canada or the U.S. right now. Brent, you know,
I think he's in the U.S.
He's in the U.S. Let's give him a call and see what he has to say. Let me give him a ring. Brent, feel free to entertain the audience. Why give Andy a call?
Sometimes when we record these things, we should talk about when people have to entertain the audience so that it's not put on the spot.
And it should be. Here we go. We're calling up Andy as we speak. Let us speak to Andy from his first taste in the UK. I bet he
I hope he answers.
Actually. I bet he does it.
He's probably like traveling through a mountain somewhere.
Yo, Andy, are you there? Britt, can you hear me?
I can hear you. I can't hear Andy.
Well, let's give him a ring one more time to see if it works. We had him, but then we lost him. We'll give him a ring. This is, as always, on our action-packed podcast, calling people from trains. Because as we speak, Andy's on the train. I think he's in the middle of a mountain on a train, somewhere like Nebraska or somewhere.
I feel like that's not right at all. Okay. I think he's still on the West Coast.
Hello?
Yo, Andy, are you there?
Hello?
Andy, are you there?
Andy? Uh-oh.
Well, looks like Andy's phone only works one. Maybe you got one of those discount phones that only works one way. Like you can hear stuff.
Oh, sorry, mate. I'm on the train. I can't talk.
It's on the train again.
It's like a crowded carriage.
All right. So you don't want to be on the podcast then?
No, sorry, mate.
All right, man. No problem. Later on. Well, Britt, I would just like to say, never trust an Englishman, because Britt, did Andy beg us to be on the podcast while
he did. We were prepared for this. We made this time, well, mostly because I demanded it, but he said he was available for it.
And I was excited because it would be the first time we'd have an international traveler while he was on international grounds on the podcast to give us.
And I was excited because I just wanted to listen to his accent. Just like the rest of the listeners.
Maybe he should. I mean, everybody else talks on the phone on the train, so I think he should have muscled through. But nevertheless, let us soldier on, because basically, Britt, you and I, we've got plenty to talk about anyway, and we don't need some Englishman clouding up our conversation. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely not.
So anyway, Britt, the first thing to talk about today is A Day to Remember is suing Victory Records, and Victory Records is suing A Day to Remember back.
What's new?
Yeah, tell me about it. Absolute Punk actually put a pretty informative and well-written short statement on the crux of the issue. The issue is the following, is A Day to Remember signed a while ago with Victory Records. The contract said that they had to give them 5 albums. But the problem is the contract is extremely ambiguous as to what the term album means. A Day to Remember is arguing that album refers to both what we would call a studio album and compilations and re-releases of albums, while Victory Records is arguing that the term album means, like, I guess, 10 brand new songs for each record. So about 50 songs, roughly speaking, I guess. It might go to trial. We don't know. But the biggest thing that happened right now is Victory Records asked for an injunction. An injunction is where the court says you can or you must not do something. Victory Records asked for an injunction to say that A Day to Remember cannot self-release their record because they're under exclusive contract to Victory. The court ruled it. They did not grant the injunction, meaning that although the court hasn't decided on whether or not A Day to Remember has breached their contract with Victory, they're allowed to put out their own records in the meantime. Which really, if they weren't, it'd be ruined for the band, because lawsuits can drag out to 5 years sometimes.
Right. okay. I did my research on this. I haven't followed this story. I don't really like A Day to Remember. I don't like Victory Records either. So every time anything comes up around this, it's mostly the roll your eyes response and move on with your life. But I researched it for this conversation. And I think one of our commenters on this story actually made a funny remark about how the judge considered this pop music. And I thought that was pretty good. So I'm going to mention that. However, I do think that the judge saying, hey, A Day to Remember should be able to release this album is what should have happened. But I was actually going to ask you, because I know you're our resident legal advisor. So I was going to ask you, did you read the entire injunction? Did you read the entire court case thing that Property of Zach put up?
Well, actually, Property of Zach kind of made a mistake. They call that an injunction paperwork. That's not what that is. When you do a motion is basically asking the court to do or to not do something. That is the what Property of Zach listed was the court's order. The court's order is when the court says, I've looked at both sides' arguments, here's my decision. The court's order says they are not granting the injunction. That it's not what we call an injunction paperwork. It's an order denying Victory's request for an injunction.
Oh, all right. Well, there you go. Property of Zach, take note. But do you think, okay, I did. I agree that the definition of album is ridiculously vague. I don't have a legal background, and I can recognize that that's incredibly vague. Do you think the band has done their contract? Do you think they've done their 5 albums or their 5 really vague, possibly quite maybe an album?
Well, what I'll say this is not legal advice, and I don't know all the facts of the case, and most people know all the facts of the case.
Right.
But the problem is, and this is quite common in the music industry, and you would think these labels would have this solved by now, especially these big labels, is you would think, well, these big independent labels. I think major labels are a little bit more on their game, and they have very specific definitions. But, labels like Sub Pop have had this problem before. I think Epitaph might have – actually, Epitaph probably not. I don't want to libel anybody or slander anybody. But Victory Records having this problem right now is the whole contract for, the recording contract is, 3 pages. You got to have definitions. And so my answer is I think a compilation album could be considered an album under the terms of the contract, because it doesn't say studio. I mean, right. It doesn't say album of brand new studio recordings. It says album. And as you and I know, Britt, I mean, in the music industry, this is an important part of contract construction when it comes to litigation is the court, when there are ambiguous terms, the court will look to see whether or not a specific industry has specific meanings for that term.
Oh, so that could hurt Victory then.
It very well could. And if I was a Data Remembers lawyer, I would say, you know, look at all these websites that refer to a compilation album as an album. It's in the name. So a compilation album does include their definition of album. They don't specifically say brand new studio recordings of 10 brand new studio recordings is a new album. With a lot of the major labels, they often do say, you know, 12 songs at 50 minutes or something like that, you know. This is just very vague. A lot of times companies will leave their contracts vague in hopes that it'll come to their benefit. But in this situation, I think it's going to hurt them quite a bit.
Right. You know, it's interesting. I come from a public relations background. That's what I studied in school. And so this isn't the only gigantic public relation, like, shit show that's been thrown at Victory. We mentioned in the story, we mentioned the Hawthorne Heights issue with them, but I know that also Atreyu and Taking Back Sunday and Hatebreed have all left due to disputes with Victory. And so for my research, I Google searched Victory Records disputes with bands. Okay. Pretty vague statement. So many negative comments. Like, I don't know how Victory is still in business. And everybody trash talks Tony Brummel. So you would think that somewhere down the line, the record label would have thought, hey, maybe we are doing things right. Maybe we should redo this. Because you don't hear Victory, Record success stories.
You don't. Now, of course, we don't know anything about, you know, what actually happened, but there's a lot of people out there that worked for Victory Records, and they say that working for Victory was an incredibly unpleasant place. I don't know if that's true, but that's – I mean, there are people out there that have said that. But I got to say, it doesn't seem to be hurting Victory Records financially at all. I mean, Victory Records seems to be bigger than ever, you know, especially with these – any more and more they seem to be riding these very – flash in the pan groups or very trendy groups, which from a business perspective might make sense. You know, you make a whole bunch of money off them at once and then you forget about them. You don't have to give them any more money, you know? So, I mean, I would say that Tony Brummel probably is a very intelligent businessman, but I think he might be so smart it might bite him in the end. But at any rate, I mean, there's a lot of litigation out there regarding your Victory Records and a lot of hearsay and a lot of this. So, but bands keep signing with Victory Records over and over and over. So at this point, you know, I mean, you know, fool me once, it's your fault, but fool me twice, shame on, I completely screwed that up. Like George Bush did in like 2002. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me, you know, so.
Yeah, you would think these people would do their research. I mean, a simple Google search of Victory Records would give you more than you need to know. But I guess at the same time, if you're young and naive and like somebody says, hey, I'm from a record label and I want to put out your record and here's a fancy contract and you don't know what any of this means because you're fresh out of high school, I guess I could fall for it too.
Except the contract isn't fancy. It's 3 pages. but you're extremely right, and I think you hit the nail on the head. You know, when you're 18, 19, 20, and some guy's like, yo, I'll give you 80 grand. You're like, wow, 80 grand. But a lot of these kids don't realize is that it's 80 grand over 5 albums, which is like 10 years. Well, 80 grand divided by 10 years ain't a whole lot of money, you know?
So, no. And so many of the bands have complained that they don't ever see the revenue. They don't ever see it. That's what who was it? I think that was Hawthorne Heights that said that they never saw the revenue, that their records sold something like nearly 1 million records or something ridiculously absurd like that. Who listens to Hawthorne Heights? Ever. But not the point. Point is they didn't see a dime of that. So, I don't know, shady business work. I consider myself to be an incredibly ethical person. So reading these things, it's really hard to see that when it's just blatantly unethical. Especially the vagueness. It is so easy to like blur the lines of whether this is ethical or not when you're vague as fuck.
Yeah, I guess the point is to the kids is and I wish the kids would realize this. before you sign a contract, actually, before you sign any recording contract, even if it's with some rinky-dink little label, because, you know, they might pull a Suge Knight and sign you to 10 albums and you don't know anything about it. Before you sign any contract, you know what? Put the 1,000, put the 1,500, put the 2,000 in front of an attorney, have him read it so you know exactly where you stand, you know? And the labels will push you to sign it without getting an attorney. They'll say, you can trust me, you can do this, you can do that. You know what? If they give you grief about going to an attorney or an agent, then it probably means they are trying to be sneaky, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know,
yep.
$2,000 grand now might save you $500,000 in the future, you know, or at least a lot of pain in the ass, you know?
Do you hear that, kids? Grandpa John Gentile says, find a lawyer. Do it.
That's what I'm saying. And I guess moving on, I have no transition between this and the next story. I used to be so good at transitions, but I've lost my skills. NoFX is putting out a new EP. A lot of people still love NoFX, and I didn't used to like NoFX, but more and more I'm gaining, maybe not necessarily a fandom of them, but a respect for what they do. They're putting out a new EP. It's called Stoke Extinguisher. And the B-side is their cover of Tony Sly's The Shortest Pier, which is also on the Tony Sly tribute album. The digital version has 6 tracks. A lot of them are like outtakes or B-sides. And I don't know if there's a whole lot to say about this, except that I got to say I respect NoFX for chugging along and putting out new stuff. And also I love it. I absolutely love it when bands put out singles and EPs with like rarer or unusual tracks on the flip side.
I cannot believe that NoFX is still releasing music, especially since it's like pretty well known that all of their songs eventually end up sounding the exact same. So this news about their new EP does nothing for me, because I just feel like that's going to excite the like 14-year-old punk rock self inside me. And that self hasn't been around for a long time.
I hear, you know, I agree, and I'm not a huge NoFX fan, but I am growing a certain respect for them, because like NoFX has a lot of mediocre tracks, but every once in a while I'll hear every once in a while I'll hear a track that will really, really impress me. On their last album, they have I've Got One Jealous Again, which references their song from like 15 years ago called We've Got Two Jealous Agains or something like that, which was about him and his wife getting married, and I've Got One Jealous Again is about him getting divorced. That's Fat Mike. And it's funny, but it's poignant, and it's truthful, and it's sad. It really is, if you ask me, that one song at least is master songwriting, and I gotta give props to the band for having sparks of, I guess, incredible cleverness despite their many, many mediocre tracks.
They do. I think that's a good point. I think that's why NoFX manages to stay relevant. I think even if whether you're like 14 years old and just getting into punk rock, or if you're old and you're jaded and you've seen NoFX 37 times and own every one of their albums and keep buying them for the sake of, hey, it's NoFX, well, they have a new album, I have to buy it. NoFX does eventually, somewhere in that timeline, hit a chord with almost anybody who gets into the punk rock scene. They did with me. I actually, fun story, back in, gosh, this was 2009, I think, decided I was going to break up with punk rock. Decided that it was no longer in my value system.
Oh, really?
I'm not doing it anymore. And it was because of a NoFX show.
What happened?
So I went to college in Fort Collins, Colorado. It's a college town. Very bro, Sarasotute, whole nine yards. And NoFX played the town. They didn't play Denver, so a lot of the Denver kids drove up for this show. And it was one of those shows where you spent a stupid amount of money to watch the band talk the whole time. And they get that criticism all the time. People are constantly complaining that NoFX has talked too much. But that was one of those nights where it was just so douchey. There wasn't anything like punk rock or creative or clever or intelligent about anything they said. It was nothing but encouraging all the D-bags in the crowd to continue being D-bags. And it was like, this isn't punk rock. This isn't why I got into punk rock. Why are all these people here? These people are only here because they want to like get super wasted and party and like throw each other to the ground kind of thing. And well, clearly that didn't do much. That breakup didn't go very far, because now here I am 3-4 years later and I'm on the Punk News podcast. So growing up worked out well for me.
You find yourself back in the arms of punk rock once again, no matter how brutally it might treat you.
I think that lasted for like a month of me being like, nope, I'm done, I'm out. And then I got talked into going to my first Fest, and I went to Fest, and it's been downhill since.
Well, we should give out a shout out to Fest, actually.
Yeah, we should.
Fest is this year. I think it starts in late October.
It's in 3 weeks.
In 3 weeks.
Pre-Fest starts in 3 weeks. I saw a post about that today.
And it's in Ybor City or Ybor City or...
It's Ybor.
Ybor City.
I listened to that Punk News podcast with Tony. I paid attention to the pronunciation.
Actually, you know what, kid? You should listen to that one with Tony from Tony Fest, because there's a lot of trash talking going on in that podcast.
It's fascinating. Mm. If you have not listened to it yet, stop what you're doing. Maybe stop listening to this and go listen to that, because it is fascinating, the drama that went into this year's Fest.
Indeed. So anyway, Fest this year, it runs through November. And main Fest is in Gainesville, Florida. And I think we're a co-sponsor this year like we usually are. We've been running weekly interviews with the bands, where fans can talk to the bands. About Fest.
Yep, we'll do it live.
We'll do it live right now. Actually, as we speak right now, we're doing one with Brendan Kelly. And we had this later on in the schedule, but actually we did one with Mikey Erg last week. And I think that was incredibly fruitful.
It was. You know, John G., that was a great transition. Let's go ahead and talk about Mikey Erg.
Did you like my transition?
I did. That was smooth. we did do – I missed the one with Mikey Erg. I wasn't live for it. But Mikey Erg started, right? Yeah, he was our first of the Fest We'll Do It Live edition. This week we have Brendan Kelly. We also have two more really awesome people that I can't think of off the top of my head. But they
Rob
are really
Halford
awesome.
Of Judas Priest and one of the Village People.
What?
Yeah. We've got the cop for the Village People.
No, I don't think that's right. It doesn't matter. I'll look it up after I'm done.
Oh, maybe that was from disconews.org.
Maybe. You know, our commenters might enjoy that better. There's probably more for them to talk shit
Actually,
on up there.
Let's talk about the Village People really quickly.
Okay.
And the main Village People, the guy, I forget his name, is a lot of people know. I mean, do you think the kids know who the Village People are these days? Maybe I'm so old, the kids don't even know who the Village People are.
They've got to. You can't miss that YMCA sign. You just can't miss it. So they have to know.
Well, anyway, the Village People have become synonymous with gay culture. A lot of people assume all the people in the Village People were gay. But they weren't. Well, I'm getting to that, you see. In the late 70s and early 80s, the Village People were mainstays in gay dance clubs. The main guy, who is the cop, was the first, like, he started the Village People, but they weren't called the Village People at the time. He just wanted to start a disco group. And the manager, like, built the Village People around him, and he wasn't gay. And actually, I think he's anti-gay. And so, after the Village People broke up in the late 80s, early 90s and stuff, like, there's some interviews with him being really angry about, like, the Village People were never gay. There's nothing gay about the Village People. And it's just hilarious to see how angry this guy is about gay culture, even though, I mean, the Village People are pretty gay. I don't mean that as a negative statement. I mean, Village People is pretty gay. You know, I mean, it's aimed at men who like men, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I'm saying to get angry about that makes it funny, because it so clearly is. So if Punk News listeners, if you ever have a chance, Google those interviews, and they're hilarious, because you get so angry about, like, someone even insinuating that the Village People had a gay audience when they were pretty popular in the gay dance circuit, I will tell you.
Watching you try to pull your foot out of your mouth during that was the best part of that.
Well, my foot wasn't in my mouth. I mean, I'm just saying, is that, I mean, the Village People have a large, in the 70s, they had a large gay audience. I mean, that's true.
It's true. No, you're right. It's true. It's completely true.
And so it's just funny to see how angry the guy gets when he's like, they weren't gay. Like, yeah, they were. I mean, how about all those videos with guys without shirts, like lifting weights and going into the sauna and stuff? I mean,
that sounds like gay hints to me, if nothing else.
That's what I'm saying. And right. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But anyway, back to Mikey Erg, who drummed for the Village People briefly, I think.
Do you make this stuff up?
I don't know. He drummed for the Village People from 1979 to 1983. No, but I think the Mikey Erg interview was pretty fun. Mikey Erg just seemed like a class act, you know?
Yeah. Speaking of class act, did you see him say that Madonna is a dick? Because I was like, get after it, Mikey. You tell it.
I did not. Let me look this up real quick. Why did he say he hated Madonna?
I don't know. One of our questioner people said, like, is it true that you think Madonna is the biggest dick or something? And he was like, yeah, fuck her or something.
Here's what he said. I wish he had went into this. Maybe next time we interview him, we'll have to ask him about this. Can you confirm that Madonna is, in fact, a dick? And he says, she can go to hell as far as I'm concerned.
Right. I read that and I was like, Mikey Erg, never would I have guessed.
Do you think, you know, Mikey Erg seems like a really nice guy, but do you think there's an underlying viciousness or hatred in Mikey Erg?
You know, no. I think I would like to believe there is, because it's really hard to imagine that people could be as nice as Mikey Erg, but I think he might just be as nice as Mikey Erg. And it's refreshing for somebody, you know, I have my asshole tendencies more often than I don't, so it's refreshing to see that somebody who is, like, comes off so nice could dislike somebody like Madonna. Like, get after it. You go ahead and send her to hell. But I met Mikey Erg once at Fest last year. Yeah, it was last year's Fest. Didn't know it because I am apparently oblivious to what people look like. But I chatted with him thinking that he was my friend. He was just friends with my friend Sean, and we were just chatty. And we walk away, and I was like, you didn't introduce me. What was that guy's name? And he was like, you idiot, that was Mikey Erg. And in that, like, 5-minute conversation of not having any idea who he was, he was really nice. He's also really short. I towered over him.
He is really short. I mean, he's like 5'4", maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I was like towering over him. And I mean, I know I have giraffe legs, but the dude is really small.
Have you ever considered playing for the WNBA?
No, because that would require having any level of hand-eye coordination, which I don't.
Well, fair enough. And I Mikey Erg, He seems to just have a genuine love for music, and that's why I'm pro Mikey Erg, you know? So if you get a chance – oh, Britt, are you going to Fest this year?
I was – as of last week, I was really going, and I was all for it, and then I quit my job, and now it's in limbo. We are not sure.
You should go.
I should go. You're right. But it'll depend.
Problem solved.
I still have to pay November's rent. Mm. November's rent is a thing that is happening despite me having a job or not.
According to TV, selling meth is a good way to make rent money.
Oh, well, paying attention. however, speaking of your love for Mikey Erg, he also in there, somebody asked if there was a band that he's ever wanted to play with or that has asked him to play, and he was really bummed out about not being able to. And he quoted the copyrights and not against me. And I, because of my love for Punk News and my love for our team, was a little hurt by this because he could have at least said against me to honor the survey that you put – or the petition that you put together. But the copyrights
– mayhaps you don't know, but it is actually sort of a sore subject for him because, believe it or not, it is, as I think the Punk News listeners know, we started a petition that was really just kind of silly to get Mikey Erg elected the drummer of Against Me despite the fact that drummer is not an elected position. Well, when he was down in Gainesville or Florida or that general area, he actually did do a few sessions or one session with Against Me. They actually recorded some demo tracks or something like that. And in an interview he did later, not with us, some local paper, he said that he was nervous and he didn't do as well as he had hoped he could at that tryout session. Or I don't know if it was a tryout, but that session. And so
he got... He mentions in our We'll Do It Live, he mentions that he was nervous about working with Laura Jane Grace. But I didn't know that he didn't think he did such a hot job, which bums me out because I was really for that. I'm still really for that. And I imagine that Laura's the type of person to be like, whatever, you're Mikey Erg. Let's get after it. So my hope is still there.
Well, you never know. You never know. And speaking of you never know, the Bouncing Souls have announced their home for the holiday shows, but they have not announced the openers. Every year in Asbury Park, the Bouncing Souls do like, I don't know, maybe it's like 4 shows usually. Where they have like a lot of vastly different openers. One year they had World Inferno one of the days. One year they had Leftover Crack, which I'm a mm-hmm. huge fan of that band. I think one year they might have had the Cro-Mags, but I'm not sure about that. So
that doesn't sound right.
It doesn't sound right?
No, just doesn't.
very true. But they usually have a lot of orgcore-friendly bands. So depending on – and actually they usually have like wildly different sets every night too, I think, right?
Yes.
So it's really a cool understanding. Thing for them to do. So, I mean, Britt, who would you like to see open for the Bouncing Souls at home for the holidays? That I'll give you two options. One that actually could happen, and that one that definitely could not happen, but you'd like to see.
Okay. Well, I know that could happen one.
You have inside info?
No, I mean, no.
You should have said yes.
I mean, I just, in my head, I know the one that I would say that might happen. And that would be Hot Water Music. That would make perfect sense.
Oh, because they're sharing a drummer now.
Right. Yeah. Ah. So why not? Plus, all the Hot Water fans love Bouncing Souls. All the Bouncing Souls fans love Hot Water Music. That's perfect. Plus, they'd sell so many more tickets if they were like Hot Water Music. All the kids, all the Org Court kids in the Jersey area would just lose their minds. As for...
Are you robbing a bank? Is it right now? Are you making money right now?
You know, I can't say that on air. I feel like that would incriminate
me.
Do you
hear Andy Waterfield? Britt can rob a bank and still stay on the podcast while you can't even be on a train and do the podcast.
I guess I'm going to have to switch rooms because that car alarm is not turning itself off.
Well, while you're thinking, I'll say who could happen. I'd like to see Mikey Erg open for the Bouncing Souls.
Oh.
I think that would be a cool show. I know Mikey Erg plays at Asbury Park a lot. I think he lives in that general area. So that
yeah, I think he lives in Pennsylvania somewhere.
Mikey Erg lives in Pennsylvania?
Dude, I think he does. And did you not read that questionnaire? On the We'll Do It Live, he mentions that one of his song titles is an exit in Pennsylvania. Like Ashley something, blah, 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 or another. I can't escape this car alarm.
But I mean, you know, the Ergs are from New Jersey. They're from, what's it called? Crap. Where all those bands are come up near Trenton. Let me see if I can Google it real quick.
I have no idea. I went to Jersey once. Oh. When I visited Pennsylvania, I crossed into Camden.
Well, this is a misconception a lot of West Coasters have, that all of New Jersey is like, there's really three New Jerseys. There's New Jersey that's across from New York, and it's kind of like crappy New York. There's New Jersey that's across from Philadelphia, which it used to be a really rough neighborhood, but now isn't as rough of a neighborhood. And then
don't say that. I felt really tough making it all the way through there.
Oh, you were tough. Believe me, you were tough.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And then there's the Jersey Shore, and they're all quite different. So really New Jersey, oh, well, actually there's even the fourth part. There's like farm New Jersey where it's like all tomato farms and that kind of stuff. So, New Jersey has a wide variety of, manifestations.
There you go, listeners. Go see Jersey. Although I don't think I would handle the Jersey Shore life well.
Well, honestly, I think that's a little over. See, on the Jersey Shore show, that's really like New York Jersey Shore, even though it's New Jersey. Whereas, like Southern Jersey Shore, like Cape May, Ocean City, Brigantine, Atlantic City, it's a little bit of a different culture down there. I love the Jersey Shore. I go down there like every year, a couple of times. It's just a nice place to relax, have a good time, hang out with your friends, that kind of stuff.
Oh, cool. What were we talking about with this?
Your dream opener that could never happen with Bouncing Souls. New Brunswick, that's where the Ergs are from. And like Vivian Girls are from New Brunswick.
Oh,
World Inferno is sort of from New Brunswick back in the day. Oh, that kind of thing.
You answer this question first. I need more time to think.
I guess I'll keep it vaguely punk. Because, I mean, I could say, like, the Rolling Stones, but, I mean, that's just because I like that band. It has nothing to do with the Bouncing Souls.
You invited me out to Philly to see the Rolling Stones once.
I did. You should have came. That was an awesome, awesome show.
I heard, but getting to Philly is not always the easiest thing for me,
true.
Turns out.
Because you're in Denver. I would say the punk band that I would like to see open for the Bouncing Souls would be, I know, David Johansen and or the New York Dolls. He's from New York.
Oh, cool.
He hangs out there a lot. He plays every once in a while. That would be a kick-ass show that hypothetically could happen, but probably won't.
That would be really cool. You know, we're going to come back to this when I think of a band.
Because
I feel like the majority of the bands that I've thought of either probably have or could or would play with the Bouncing Souls. Like, it's not like the Bouncing Souls, everybody loves the Bouncing Souls, with the exception of maybe me a little bit,
I'm not a mega Bouncing Soul. I mean, I tolerate them and I respect them, but I'm not like a mega fan, you know?
That's where I'm at. But I feel like everyone else in the music scene who actually is making music always loves the Bouncing Souls and cites them as like the best dudes to play shows with, or, you know, they're the greatest influences, or they have a Bouncing Souls hopeless romantic tattoo. And So I it would be really difficult. Like, I think if the Bouncing Souls went up to most people and said, hey, will you play Hometown for the holidays with us? People would have a hard time denying it because, A, that shit always sells out. B, you'd have to make a pretty good grip of money off that. C, you're playing with the Bouncing Souls and all their fanatic fans, including the 14-year-olds who are just getting into punk rock and, you know, they love Bouncing Souls, therefore they'll love anybody that the Bouncing Souls says you should love. So it's a really good deal overall. I don't know. I bet if they went up to the New York Dolls and said, yo, pull your shit together, play a show with us, what would the New York Dolls say? No. I don't know if they would. Especially in this being the year of reunions.
Very true, very true. And while Britt muses over her idea, I think we'll play a song introduced by Adam White. The band is called Puppy's Gonna Play That. And be sure to stick around for our second segment where we talk about a lot of hit more stuff. And then be sure to stay around for our bonus third segment where we're gonna play Punk's Points, episode number 2, where Britt Reiser is our fabulous announcer. So Adam White, take it away.
Hey guys, it's Adam. I've got a song for you from Pup, a band from Toronto. This is spelled P-U-P. Pup used to play a lot of shows in and around Ontario, supporting a lot of punk and hardcore bands when they were called Topanga. Yes, after the Boy Meets World character, but I guess they've wised up and changed their name, and they are now Pup. And with the new name comes a new record, and really a refinement of this band's sound. They are a really addictive, really fun, you know, post-hardcore influenced pop-punk act. The song I'm going to play for you is called Reservoir. It is from their newly released, self-titled, I guess, debut as Pup, at least, full-length, which they released on Royal Mountain Records. So this is Reservoir by Pup from Toronto. Check it out. We'll be right back.
that fabulous track by Adam. Well, not by Adam White, introduced by Adam White, the band Pup. I was digging it. I think it was fresh. And let's keep rolling along on the second half of our three halves of this week's Punk News podcast.
We got to work on your math skills. It's a good thing you're a lawyer.
Very true. Very true. The Lost Prophets, and speaking of me being a lawyer, the Lost Prophets have, quote, called it a day. The reason they've called it a day, well, they didn't say why, but here's what they said. They said, after nearly a year of coming to terms with our heartache, we finally feel ready to announce publicly what we have thought privately for some time. We can no longer continue making or performing music as Lost Prophets. And the reason for this is the most likely reason for this is because their front man, his name is, let's see, Ian Watkins, was arrested for conspiracy to rape and conspiracy to engage in sexual activity with a female under 13 and possession, distribution of indecent images of children. I think the child cited in it was like an infant, like one or two. So basically, he's being charged with child pornography related offenses, which I gotta say, that's a good reason to break up a band, you know?
You know, I don't know how you could even – it took them a long time to break up. And this court case has been going – well, this charge and this scandal has been going on for well over a year now, right?
Almost a year. December 19.
Okay. Yeah. How could you say, like, yeah, I'm in a band with a guy who wanted to rape a baby. How could you be the person – how could you be like, hey, yeah, I play in a band called The Lost Prophets. Oh, you heard about that? Sorry.
Yeah, it
took them a long time to break up.
There's no way you can salvage that name, but it does bring a greater issue. Is I talked to Black Dahlia of the Dwarves, and I know you have mixed feelings about Black Dahlia of the Dwarves. I'm a big fan.
Right, I do.
but this didn't make it in our interview with them. Basically, a little while ago, Britt, do you remember when Nick Oliveri was arrested for basically, I think it was kidnapping, drugs, and having a high-powered rifle in his house?
Yes. Yes, I do.
And everyone was like, he's going down, he's going down. I'm like, yeah, I think he's going down too. Well, he just got paroled. No one knows why. I think it's probably a constitutional issue. But during the whole time, Black Dahlia says, remember, people, a person is innocent until proven guilty. Well, everyone else said, Nick Oliveri has gone down, he's guilty. But it turned out that Black Dahlia was basically right. He stayed true to his friend, if you will, and his friend made it through. So, Britt, the question is, how much loyalty do you owe it to your band member?
You know, okay, that's a good point. All right, okay, I'm going to get feminist on you all. Sorry, folks.
Please do.
No,
please do.
I'm not sorry. I'm not sorry at all. Okay, so that is a good point, because when you know someone, okay, one in four people you know, especially women, one in four women that you know has probably experienced sexual assault or sexual, like some level of sexual assault in her lifetime, right? But that also means that you probably know a perpetrator somewhere in your friend group. You have a perpetrator among your friends. Would you ever say that? Like, when I look at my group of friends, I don't look at any of them and say, you know, it's probably that person. That person is likely of perpetuating this terrible sexual crime. No, because you believe the best in your friends. So while that is a good point, the educated side of me is like, no, you should be aware of the statistics. You should be aware that statistically speaking, this person is likely, well, maybe not this person. That makes it sound like there's a specific person. That's not fair. But statistically speaking, it is very likely that somebody you know is a perpetuator or will be a perpetuator of a very sexually violent crime. So, with that being said, there have been experiences in my life where I hear about somebody who I know, maybe not super well, but know the person. He went to jail for an extended period of time for attempted rape charges. It took me a long time to come to terms with it, which was interesting because I came from a background where I've studied this stuff and understand that this is very likely. Very rarely is a victim lying or making something up or that only happens 2% of the time statistically from what we know. So that's a good point you bring up, and I can understand why the bandmates would be like, no, that didn't happen, or that couldn't happen, or he's our best friend. Like, we got to stick with him. We got to work with it. But I don't know. At the same time, if you're in a band like the Lost Prophets, they probably made some decent money. I mean, they have some pretty good recognition. They're not some invisible band nobody's ever heard of until this scandal came up. From the business side of things, though, it surprises me that it took them so long to call it quits. from the business aspect of things. In terms of what you say, in terms of loyalty to your friend, that's a fair assessment. But I don't know. It's just those charges are so severe and so outrageous and like so incomprehensible to me.
And pretty specific too. They're pretty specific,
Really specific. You're right. I don't know if I heard this, and this was about one of my friends that was in like the group that I roll with. If somebody said like, hey, this person's being charged for this, this, and this, it would be really difficult not to believe that that's like, it's incomprehensible. But at the same time, how do you get yourself in a position where you could be charged for these things?
Yeah.
Unless
it's like some kind of sinister setup, you know?
Right.
I mean, it's a little bit easier for a black guy because having drugs and an illegal gun isn't as morally reprehensible as, you know, having sex with an infant, you know? I mean, it's not even in the same solar system, you know?
No. So, if you have an illegal gun, I roll my eyes at you.
Yeah.
If you do any kind of sexual crime, that's like, we don't need to have communication anymore. That's not something I need to support. I don't need that negativity in my life or anybody I know's life.
I think we're sort of on the same page in that if I was in this position, you'd have to look down and think, did your friend really do this? If it's something minor, you stick with your friend no matter what, you know?
Right.
I mean, did he rape or kill somebody? Where somebody else is being – not to get too – political or whatever, but if you just you have guns and the drugs, you're not really hurting anybody at that moment, you know? So you can back your friend. I mean, I kind of think you still are, but, you know, let's not get – you got to draw the line somewhere. But if somebody, like, killed or raped somebody, then, I mean, you shouldn't really help your friend out in that situation unless you truly think they didn't do it, you know? I mean, if I thought my friend was being charged with something like that and I didn't think he would do it, I would help him out. I wouldn't do anything illegal, but I would provide emotional support. But here
–
go ahead.
In regards to that, in putting that back on Lost Profits, we haven't heard anything from the band throughout all of this. We haven't heard from the band saying, no, we can attest to his character. His character would never do this. Like, at least as far as I know, I have not seen any news reports that's like, hey, the members of Lost Profits have come out and they said that they stand by Ian, that he is not capable of doing this, that they have seen him in his best and his worst is not capable of doing this. We haven't seen that.
True, true. So maybe, and we certainly don't know, but perhaps it implies they think he is guilty.
Right, exactly. Or that they don't think he's innocent at minimum. I don't know.
Anyway, I mean, that's pretty messed up stuff he's gotten charged with. I mean, wow.
Yeah, you can't really come back from that. Oof. And if you can, that just proves society's really terrible.
The only way you can come back from that is if you're proved not guilty and you like it was like a setup. Like,
right. There's proof that it was a setup.
Yeah. You know, like if you say, oh, it wasn't me. It was like if it's just not guilty just because they don't have enough evidence, you're still ruined. But if you're like, oh, it was Jim trying to ambush me or whatever, that's the only way you can come back from that. I'm just going to mention this real quickly and then we'll move on. It's a lot of people will be like, I can't believe you got charged with conspiracy to molest a minor. A lot of people don't really understand what conspiracy means. When people think conspiracy, they think that like people sit around a boardroom table and like, you know, have papers and diagrams and stuff. All the conspiracy is when two or more people agree to ongoing criminal enterprise. And so basically, like, Britt, if you and I were to say, yo, you want to rob a bank, and you say yes, that means we have a conspiracy. That's all that means. And the conspiracy is incredibly effective because it means you can charge everybody involved in the conspiracy with all the crimes that the people have done. So, like, let's say you, me, and Armando say, yo, let's all go rob a bank together. We all say yes, and Armando goes and steals a getaway car for us. Both you and I are still also guilty for stealing a getaway car.
Right. And speaking of that sound you heard earlier – not us robbing a bank.
No, totally wasn't. Absolutely not.
Not at all.
Let's change the subject real quick. Ministry's Al Jurgensen is releasing a comic book series. I specifically picked this article out because I wanted Andy, the comic book maniac, to talk about it. But he's on a train, so he can't talk about it.
I was fully planning on not contributing to this one bit because I was like, I don't know anything about this. So I'm just going to let Andy take this whole thing over and I'll sit back and I will listen and I will laugh appropriately or make some snide comment appropriately. Now I can't do that.
Well, to punish Andy, we'll breathe. By and here's what I'll say. His Ministry is an incredibly interesting band. Al Jurgensen is a wild, wild dude. He's done so many drugs and has so many wild. He's just one of these guys that does lots of drugs, but it doesn't kill him. And I think because he's not depressed, I think he just likes doing drugs. So no matter what, I think his comic book series will be extremely interesting. It's being put out by, let's see here. Oh, it doesn't say who's putting it out. At any rate, it's basically about Alien F. Jurgensen and his rise of superpowers. And so it'll probably be trippy. It's vaguely based on Al Jurgensen. And it will premiere at next July's Comic-Con. It's going to be 13 issues, and the artist is Sam Sheridan. So if you like Ministry or comic books, you can check that on out. Moving onward, speaking of, I guess, more obsequious things, is Ice Age has just released a new 7. They're going to release a 7 on November 19. The A-side is a cover of a Sinead O'Connor song, Jackie, and the flip side is a track called To the Comrades, which I believe is an original. I gotta say, I like Ice Age a lot. A lot of people say they were Nazis or whatever, but I'm almost positive they're not Nazis. If anything, because their drummer is Jewish. But, I mean, and people are like, well, you can still be a Nazi and be Jewish. I kind of think you can't. I mean, like, unless he hates all Jewish and is Jewish, then he could be a Jewish Nazi, I guess. But I think it's people just throwing around that tag a little dangerously because Nazis are pretty reprehensible people. And just throwing it out there without any real investigation of underlying things, I think is irresponsible and, frankly, cruel. You know, so, but not to get off topic, I think it's cool this band covers Sinead O'Connor. It sounds like a serious cover of the song, not like a piss take, and I think it's a daring choice, and I enjoy it. The band's got a unique sound.
You know, I listened to that. I listened to both versions because I didn't know the original version prior to an hour ago or so. And the Ice Age version, I really liked. I really like when a band takes a song that is outside their genre, outside their time frame. You know, it's not them trying to cover some classic punk rock song or whatever. It's completely outside of that. And I think they did a really good job of it because they put their own spin on it. It's a sound. It's a song that they can now make their own. Which I love when bands do that, when they cover a song, because you're playing homage to who wrote the song originally, but you're also putting your own spin on it and allowing to take something that maybe you really love or has some level of emotional attachment to, or maybe you just think it's a great song and you're putting your own spin on it. I love that. So I really enjoyed Jackie.
And I gotta say, I hope Ice Age is sort of has they're sort of tagged as one of these flash in the band hipster punk bands, and I can see that because they did sort of come out of nowhere, you know, and they are on a Matador, which isn't necessarily a quote hipster label, but there's a lot of hip bands on Matador, a good chunk of which flare up and then die out, you know. I saw Ice Age live with White Lung, Nightbirds, and Mets. It was a killer show.
Oh, I bet that was a great show.
It was. It was real. Brian Yancey was there. I was there. Andy from Ceremony was there.
Gosh, you guys are so Philly and awesome.
I know.
Dang it.
I know. We just saw Andrew WK and Marky Ramone do all Ramone songs. It was me and Joe Pallone. That was pretty wild.
Wow.
So anyway, this band, I think Ice Age is a cool band. I hope they, quote, weather the storm and continue on making interesting music. But we'll see. We'll see. And speaking of band, oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Britt.
I was going to agree. That's it.
Well, take us on home. Take us on home with this last article of the day.
What?
Take us on. Well, what's the last article we're going to talk about on today's Punk News podcast?
Oh gosh, dang it, John G. We have to edit this part out. Hold on.
I don't edit. I just let stuff fly. I'll amuse the audience. I mean, you want me to read it? Or I was trying not to.
I mean, I'll read it. I just have to pull it up. Well, we went out of order, and so I stopped paying attention to my thing.
That's how we fly. We fly.
Oh, you're right. I totally can take this next article up.
Bam,
okay.
Bam. Yeah. Bam.
Okay. John G did this on purpose because he knows.
I know.
The Menzingers are recording a new full length. Life cannot get better than that news. Okay, that's not true. When the recording comes out, life will be better. But for right now,
what if you won the lottery? The Powerball.
Okay, well, that would really help the fact that I need to pay November's rent.
And you
it's true. You're right. However, my love for the Menzingers is just I have my number one favorite band of all time is Against Me. I'm a dedicated Against Me fan. I have been since I was like 14 years old. You know, that 14-year-old punk rock thing. Hasn't changed. I'm there, still there. There we go. Menzingers came out of nowhere back in like, oh gosh, when did I start listening to them? Is that 2007, 2008? And they stole my heart, stole my heart. And it is to the point where I would almost say that Menzingers might match my love for Against Me, which is incredible when you think about my intense love for Against Me. Okay, but you all don't know that, so you all can't be sure what that truly means. However, Menzingers are currently recording their new full length. They are doing it with producer John Lowe, who is the same person who produced Restoration's newest LP, LP2. I don't know if you all have listened to that, or you, John G. Restorations, are they up your alley? Do you like them?
I've actually seen them live twice, believe it or not. I think they're from Philadelphia.
They are, yeah.
They play Philadelphia quite often, usually the First Unitarian Church, which sounds like it's a religious thing. I guess the church is, but in the basement, like, they just have, like, it's like, well, I guess it's owned by the church, but they just have, like, shows there.
Buddy Heavy. Heaven.
And they have, like, it's probably about, I would say, 80 people capacity, maybe 100. They have a lot of these cool kind of shows there. You know, like that level bands, Nightbirds, Restorations, all the Ice Age was there. It's a really cool venue. And Restoration, it was Restorations. It was that band Brian Yancey likes, that goth band, what are they called? Psychic Teens. They're actually pretty cool.
I don't know that band.
What's that band with the guy that's always angry? Story for a Year, End of a Year? What's that band?
Story of the Year.
Story of the Year, yeah. And
I don't know why we just talked about that.
I think it's End of a Year, isn't it?
I have no idea. I know Story of the Year, which is like a band from like 2006 or something
It's the guy that's angry. He's got an online column or whatever.
I don't know.
He's snarky. Honestly, anytime I hear snarkiness, I just zone out. I'm so tired of snarkiness. You know, I want true opinions, and I want sincerity. Like World Inferno says, sincerity. Enough with the snarkiness. Enough with the too cool for school. Let's just put it all on the table and talk about what means something to us. That's what I'm saying. And Britt Reiser's band, the Menzingers, means something to you.
It's true. So what I was going to say is their producer who's working on this new album, John Lowe, just put out the Restorations album. You should listen to that album. By you, I mean all of you listeners, not just John G, all of you listeners. Restorations come to Denver this weekend, actually. Pretty excited about that.
Are you going
to
go?
Yeah, I am. I actually think I'm volunteering at the venue that night, so I'm hoping that I can like shimmy out of my volunteer role so I can get excited for Restorations with the rest of the kids.
What do you do? Just like take tickets to the door or something?
Yeah, I'm a door person because I'm too intimidated to do the sound. But it's a DIY venue, so it's run by like
sound. That's a skill that you can earn money doing. You should do that.
You're right. You can earn money doing that. But I can't clap on a beat, okay? I have no rhythm. I'm sure that my hearing is off. I don't want to fuck up everybody else's listening experiences because I think I'm cool behind the soundboard. No. I'll leave that to people who can hear. Anyways, Menzinger's new album. It's going to be the follow-up to On the Impossible Past, which was my number one album of the year last year in 2012. I actually almost think it was Punk News' number one of the year, too. Did I make that up?
I think it was.
It was number one or number two. It was in the top three, for sure.
I'm almost sure it's number one.
Yeah, I think it was, too. For valid reason, because it was an incredible album. And I am a huge fan of their entire discography, including all their EPs, including their past releases. So I'm really excited about this. However, with On the Impossible Past being the incredible album that it was, I think a lot of people are really nervous that this album just can't compete, which is fair. You know, I do not envy being Tom May or any of the Menzingers right now, because that album was so acclaimed by so many people. Like, even people who weren't even into punk rock loved that album. I can't imagine coming up with it. So it'll be exciting to see what they do. But a nice preview, they're doing a split with the Bouncing Souls. Go back to the Bouncing Souls earlier. I bet you Menzinger. I wonder if Menzingers will play. Yeah, no, they've played Hometown for the Holidays in the past. Maybe they wouldn't. That would get me to go to Hometown for the Holidays as if Menzingers opened. Actually, they've toured with Menzingers. That's what I'm thinking about. That tour came through Denver and it had Luther on it. Good tour. Anyways, they are putting out a split with the Bouncing Souls. That's coming out on November 5th. So that should be a good indicator as to where they're going to go. Because each album that the Menzingers have put out has had a pretty substantial change from album to album. Like, they have grown on each album. It's incredible. So I'm excited. Thank you for letting me introduce that, even though I didn't remember what we were introducing. But I am excited, and it's going to rule, even if it's not as good as The Impossible Past. I just don't believe the Menzingers can fuck up.
Indeed, it was number one in 2012, beating out the Gaslight Anthem and Classics of Love, much to my dismay.
Mm. Right, yeah, it deserves to beat out the Gaslight Anthem. You know, I never listened to that Classics of Love album. Maybe I should, like,
it's awesome.
Do
it's
that.
Awesome. I mean, you know, I think that's what I hear. The band is basically over. I mean, because, like, they're all in different, like, cities now. But
right, that's what I heard, yeah.
But, I mean, honestly, it's a modern-day classic. It's marvelous. And speaking of split records, along the lines of the Bouncing Souls Menzinger split, I'm going to play a track from Tank Crimes Records, one of the best record labels out in Oakland. I really like this label. They put out a little while ago a split 12-inch with Municipal Waste and Toxic Holocaust. I think
you like this record label.
Honestly, Tank Crimes got Kicker on them. I love Kicker. Kicker is Pete DeRoadie, who roadied for, like, all these old crust punk bands back in the day. A guy from Neurosis, a guy from Dystopia, and a guy from Filth. One of the most fun bands I've ever seen live. But today we're going to play a band called Toxic Holocaust, which is kind of like retro thrash throwback. This is off their split with Municipal Waste out on Tank Crimes record, and it is called We Bring Him Hell. And when I say M, I mean like them, but without the TH. We bring hell. Oh, and be sure to stick around, because afterwards we're going to be playing Punk's Points Episode 2 with Britt Rise as our host for our punk trivia renegade. Hey, Britt, actually, let's pause for a minute. And Britt, did you think the questions were too hard? I tried to make the questions pretty easy, but I think they were still too hard.
I think they were so difficult, but maybe I'm just I'm terrible at trivia in general. But from the feedback of people who listened to our first Punk's Point show, everybody was like, I wouldn't have known any of that.
Yeah, so I think we'll do it again sometime. I'll make the questions easier, especially the first two.
I think your level one and two questions were like decent enough, but level three, that was just,
well, actually,
anytime anybody answered any of those, I was like, dang,
I want level three to be impossible, honestly, but level one and two, especially level two, should have been easier. Anyways, so we'll be playing Punk's Points again. So if you want to be on the game show in the future, if you want to talk to us about anything, you can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. So we're going to play this track by Toxic Holocaust, play our game show, and then wrap up the podcast. We'll be right back after this wonderful song.
We are the street metal punks. We party in hell. Tracking in Hades, mistaken as hell. Summon the Reaper with answered intent. Pissing on Jesus and of the dead. We bring them hell. We bring them hell. We bring them hell. We're gonna pick on the spots and rage to the night. We'll bulldoze your houses and fuck all your wives. The fire's still burning deep down inside. Whiskey or poison that keeps us alive. We bring a hell. And our hearts out of control. We bring a hell. Satanic raw rock and roll. We bring a hell. Out of their heads. We bring a hell. Ah! Stuck in the streets, looking for a flight. Toxic stuffy legions will crush you in this might. The kids are fell up from enough. We smash all the light. Our lust for death grows on this night. Spot at least, violence will assume. Tearing up the infant from the verge of drawing room. We shed the blood of the rim, we howl in the moon. Your death for us will come so soon.
And welcome to Punk's Points. I'm Britt Reiser. I'll be your judge this evening, and I will lead you through the beginning of this game. This is the game show where punk rockers show just how true punks they are through useless punk rock trivia. The game is simple. There are three rounds, easy, medium, and difficult. Each round has five categories of five questions, and each punk is asked a question about that category. If he or she gets it right, they get five 10, or 15 punks points respectively. At the end, punks can bet as many of their points as they want on the final question. The punk with the most punks points at the end will win fabulous gifts and prizes. Without further ado, let's go ahead and meet our contestants. First off, Dave, how are you tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Oh, I'm fantastic. Next up, we have Katie. Katie, what's going on?
I'm feeling really smart.
Good, good. We need that. Next, we have Jeff. What's the news, Jeff?
I like fun.
Perfect. We like it too. And last but not least, we have Jay. Thanks for being here.
Thanks.
Great. And now it is time to bring out our host, Johnny Gentile.
Yeah.
Thanks, Britt. How you doing tonight?
Oh, John, I am fantastic. How are you?
Doing real good. I was playing the back nine, doing real well, but couldn't be happier to be here on the Punks points, let me tell you.
That's right. That's how it should be. And last but not least, our show would not be complete without the lovely Mondo White.
Yeah. Hello, everybody.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Now it is time to begin the game and see who is the most punks on another exciting episode of Punks Points.
Woo! Yeah. Okay, Armando, would you let our lovely contestants know what the first category is?
All right, we are now going to kick off the easy round. The first category, and arguably the easiest, is The Clash.
Dave, first question to you for 5 points. Dave, what is the name of the second Clash album?
Give Him Enough Rope.
Correct for 5 points. Next one goes to Katie. Katie, what Clash album originally came with 3 LP records?
No answer.
The answer
I don't know.
Sandinista. And remember, always take a guess because you don't lose points by getting them wrong. Next question goes to Jeff. Jeff, for 5 points, what did the cover of London Calling parody?
Shit. I have no idea.
Elvis's first album. Last one for this category goes to Jay. Jay, what Clash album was originally 2 LPs?
London Calling.
Correct for 5 points. Armando, what's our next category?
Next category is original members.
Back to Dave for 5 points. Dave, which of the following is not an original member of Black Flag? Henry Rollins, Keith Morris, or Greg Ginn?
Henry Rollins.
Correct for 5 points. Next question goes to Katie. Katie, which of the following is not an original member of the Ramones? I'll repeat that. Who is not an original member of the Ramones? Johnny, Marky, or Tommy?
Tommy.
Incorrect. I'm sorry. The answer is Marky, who replaced Tommy on drums in the Ramones. Next one goes to Jeff. Jeff, which of the following is not an original member of the Bad Brains? HR, Israel Joseph I, or Dr. No?
Israel Joseph I.
Correct for 5 points. Next one in this category goes to Jay. Jay, which of the following is not an original member of The Clash? Joe Strummer, Mick Jones, or Topper Heaton?
Topper.
Correct for 5 points. Next one, Armando, what's our next category?
References in songs and names.
First one goes to Dave. Dave, the Dead Kennedys is a reference to what two political figures?
Well, Robert F. Kennedy and John F. Kennedy, and I guess it could be a pun on Ted Kennedy.
Correct for 5 points. Next one goes to Katie. Katie, the Misfits song, Who Killed Marilyn, references what famous actress?
Marilyn Monroe.
Correct for 5 points. The next one to Jeff. Jeff, Propagandhi references what religious / political figure?
Mahatma Gandhi.
Correct for 5 points. Next one to Jay. Jay, P.S. Eliot references what famous writer?
No idea.
T.S. Eliot, who wrote The Great Gatsby. Next category, Armando, what's our next category?
Our next category is either very easy or very hard, depending on how much of a loser you were in high school, and it's ska.
Yay!
Yes!
This is one for the losers. First off, Dave, what country does ska originate?
Jamaica.
correct for 5 points. Next one goes to Katie, and by her exclamation, she should find this very easy. Katie, what ska band famously featured Tim Armstrong and Jesse Michaels for 5 points?
Oh, you've got to be kidding me. if you hadn't asked me that. Oh, I can't answer you.
The answer is Operation Ivy.
Yeah, damn it.
Next question goes to Jeff. Jeff, what pattern? Jeff, what pattern did English two-tone ska bands famously adopt? What
checkerboard.
Correct for 5 points. Last one in this round to Jay. Jay, American ska that became popular in the late 80s and early 90s is known as blank wave ska.
First wave?
Third wave ska, I'm afraid. Third wave ska. First wave ska would refer to Jamaican music.
That makes sense.
Armando, what is our next round?
All right. Our last round for the easy set of questions is about our lovable and ever favorable tiny multiple musician maker, Mikey Erg.
And the first to one of our favorite musicians, Mikey Erg, goes to Dave. Dave, for 5 points, Mikey Erg drummed and sang for what crack rock steady affiliated band?
Star fucking hipsters.
Correct for 5 points. Next question to Katie. Katie, Mikey Erg was once the subject of a petition to make him the drummer of what band?
Against Me.
Correct for 5 points. Next one goes to Jeff. Jeff, Mikey Erg has a thrash metal side project that released a flexi disc. What was the name of that metal project?
I have no clue.
It's Fucifer or Fuckifer, depending on how you want to pronounce it. Ah. Last one to Jay. Jay, from what band did Mikey Erg get his name?
Oh, I don't know.
The answer is the Ergs, famous pop punk trio. Now, Armando, I believe we're moving on to Medium.
Before we move on, are we doing a recap of the points earned so far?
We are. Brittany, would you tell us the current standings of our wonderful contestants?
Absolutely. Dave is hanging out at a lovely 25 points. Congratulations, Dave. Katie is hanging out at 10 points. Jeff is at 15. And Jay is at 10.
Wonderful. Armando, what's the next category in medium difficulty?
The next category in medium is the fest.
Okay, the first question goes with Dave. Dave, for 10 points, Dave, what band famously ended their headlining set after 12 minutes in 2012 after being dragged off stage at the festival?
I don't know, Lawrence Arms?
The Dwarves. It was the Dwarves, as per their legacy of ending shows after 5 to 10 minutes. Next one goes to Katie. Katie, what number fest is Fest 2013?
Fest 12.
Correct, for 10 points to Katie. Now to Jeff. Jeff, for 10 points, what band once played a 30-second set in the back of U-Hauls before it was shut down by the police on horses?
Screeching Weasel.
Close. Paint It Black with Dan Demon. Last one to Jay. Jay, in what city is Pre-Fest this year?
Preface? No idea.
Little Ybor City / Tampa Bay. Armando?
All right. Our next question, or our next category of questions, is about the band's Bomb the Music Industry.
And the first question goes to Dave. Dave, before Jeff Rosenstock was in Bomb the Music Industry, what band was he in?
Laura Stevenson and the Cans.
Arrogant Sons of Bitches. That's Arrogant Sons of Bitches. Next question goes to Katie. Katie, while in Bomb the Music Industry, Jeff Rosenstock had an electronic-based band. What was the name of that electronic-based band?
I don't know.
Pegasus XL. That's Pegasus XL. Next question goes to Jeff. Jeff, name one of the major network shows that featured a Bomb the Music Industry song.
How I Met Your Mother.
Close. Weeds or The Office. Weeds or The Office. Last one goes to Jay. Jay, I think Jay, right? Jay. Jay, for 10 points. Some Bomb the Music Industry shows are just Jeff Rosenstock, a guitar, and what device used to generate music?
I don't know. Computer?
Close. An iPod, which is almost a computer. Next question. This one's difficult, but I think it was made particularly for John Gentile. Armando, what's our category?
Our next category is John Gentile's iPod. Just kidding. It is crust punk music.
That's right, crust punk. So let's all get sticky. Dave, what crust punk started out as the band with no name?
I don't know, Crass?
Amoebics. I would say Crass is technically anarcho-punk, but they're close. Yeah. They're related. Katie, what crust punk band is named after a film by Alejandro Jodorowsky?
I got nothing.
The Holy Mountain. The Holy Mountain, which is a tribute film, which all people should see. Sleep also has their record label called The Holy Mountain. Next one to Jeff. Jeff, what crust punk band has the album In Darkness, There Is No Choice?
I'm going to have to go with the Bee Gees.
Yep. Close. Antisect.
Nailed it.
Jay, last question for this category. What crust punk band features former members of His Hero Is Gone, Severed Head of State, and Death Threat?
Fuck. I don't know.
Tragedy, who plays about one show per year. Tragedy. I think the next category is easier. Armando, what's our next category?
The next category is colors that end in Urpal. The real actual category is famous comps.
Okay, for 10 points, back to Dave. Dave, Alternative Tentacles put out what compilation that references a quote credit to Mary Antoinette and features Reagan on the cover?
Let Them Eat Jelly Beans.
Correct for 10 points. Katie, Hellcat Records put out a series of comps called what?
I'm sorry, you broke up. What'd you say?
Hellcat Records put out a series of comps called what? A series of compilations called what?
The Thing That Ate Larry Livermore.
No, I'm afraid it's Give Him the Boot. Give Him the Boot. Jeff, what Rodentia referencing comp featured live songs from Black Flag, Bad Brains, The Circle Jerks, and others?
Fat Music for Fat People.
Close. Rat Music for Rat People. What Fat Music for Fat People was named after. Last question goes to Jay. Jay, Fat Records once put out a compilation called Short Music for Short People. How many people are on that comp?
Isn't it like 101?
Exactly. Correct for 10 points. Armando, what's the last category in this section?
The last category for the medium level questions is going to be punk rock alter egos.
Okay, back to Dave. Back to Dave for 10 points. Dave, who is Jan Paul Beam?
I don't know.
That's Darby Crash of the Germs. Darby Crash of the Germs.
Bobby Penn, that was his name.
Jeff, are you in a subway or something?
No. Why? What's going on?
Okay, we're getting a lot of a static on your end, but that's okay. Katie, next question to you. Katie, who is Jeffrey Hyman?
I don't know. I'm sorry.
That's Joey Ramone of the Ramones. Next one goes to Jeff. Jeff, who is Gerald Kayafa?
Tim McElrath.
Jerry Only. Next one goes to Jay. Jay, last one. Who is G.A. Anzalone?
Can you repeat that?
Yes. Who is G.A. Anzalone to Jay for 10 points? G.A. Anzalone.
G.A. Anzalone. No idea.
That's Glenn Danzig. Glenn Danzig is GA. Glenn Andrew Angelo.
I see.
Armando, what's our next category?
That ends the medium category, so Britt will do a point.
Right now, we have Dave in the lead with 35 points. Then we go to Katie, who has 20 points, Jeff with 25, and Jay with 20.
Fair enough. Armando, what's our category for the next round?
Well, kicking off the hard round, and arguably this will...
Armando, are you there? Hello.
Uh-oh.
Or is Armando gone? Okay, well, the next category is crack rock steady. So the first one goes to Dave. Dave, what was the name of choking victim before they were choking victim?
Another dying democracy?
No commercial value. No commercial value. For 15 points, Katie, choking victim covered what Cyndi Lauper song?
Girls just want to have fun? Not
sure. Almost. Her second hit, Money Changes Everything. Next one goes to Jeff. Jeff, what country on the Asian continent did Ezra Kirei grow up on?
Laos.
Sri Lanka. Next door, Sri Lanka. Jay, last question to you. Jay, before Leftover Crack, Brad Logan was in what hardcore band?
What's it called? I can't think of it right now.
F minus. That's F minus.
That's it.
Shit. Next category is unlikely relations. Back to you, Dave. Dave, for 15 points, John Lydon is the stepfather of what famous punk/reggae vocalist? And I'll say that again. John Lydon is the stepfather of what famous punk/reggae vocalist?
Hurry up.
Correct for 15 points. Next one goes to Katie. Katie, Gwen Stefani is a distant cousin of what famous pop singer?
Miley Cyrus?
No, I'm afraid it's Madonna. Madonna. They both...
good guess. Good guess.
Jeff, this goes to you. Jeff, Greg Ginn is brother with what famous artist?
Adam Levine.
Raymond Pettibone. Raymond Pettibone, who famously designed Black Flag flyers. Jay, last one to you, quite fittingly. Jay Weinberg of Against Me, or formerly of Against Me, is the son of what famous drummer?
Oh. Don't know.
Max Weinberg of the E Street Band, and also of, is he on Conan O'Brien?
I
think he is now, yeah.
Did not know that.
Next category, Armando, are you here with us?
Yes, I am back. Sorry about the interruption.
Armando, do you know the category that we're on to now?
Yes, the category we are on to now is first, actually no, it's not first singers. It is unlikely.
Yes, it is.
Oh yeah, Katie's first singers. Sorry. First singers.
Okay. This goes back to Dave. Dave, who was the original singer for the Descendants?
Was it Carl?
Lombardo. Tony Lombardo.
Okay.
Next one goes to Katie. Katie, who was the original lead singer for the Ramones?
Joey.
D.D. Ramone. Next one goes to Jeff. Jeff, who was the original singer for No Doubt?
Eric Stefani?
John Spence. However, Eric Stefani did sing background vocals, and he went on to animate The Simpsons. Last question. Jay, who was the original lead singer for the Bad Brains?
I thought it was HR.
McRae was actually before HR. That's Sid McRae. Armando, what's our category?
Our second to last category in the hard questions is the reggae connection one.
Okay, the first question goes to Dave. Dave, Mikey Dread recorded what punk rock bassist on his Pave the Way album? That's Mikey Dread recorded with what punk rock bassist on his Pave the Way album?
Paul Simonon.
Correct for 15 points. Next one goes to Katie. Katie, Jimmy Cliff recorded an album with what American punk rocker?
Who? I'm sorry.
Jimmy Cliff recorded an album with what American punk rocker last year?
Billy Joe Armstrong?
Close. Tim Armstrong. Next one goes to Jeff. Jeff, name one of the reggae acts mentioned in The Clash's White Man in Hammersmith Palace.
The Wailers.
I'm afraid that's incorrect. It's Dillinger, Leroy Smart, Delroy Wilson, and Ken Booth. Last one goes to Jay. Jay, Propagandi once lyrically attacked what exclusively Rastafarian religious finger? And I say exclusively because it's not Jesus or Moses. It's an exclusively Rastafarian religious figure. Propagandi attacked what famous Propagandi once lyrically attacked what exclusively Rastafarian religious figure?
No, I don't know.
The answer is Haile Selassie with their song Haile Selassie Up Your Ass. Last Armando, what's the last question?
The last category, and most definitely the most difficult because I just browsed these questions, is Joey Ramone.
And the first one goes to Dave. Dave, before he was in the Ramones, for 15 points, before he was in the Ramones, Joey Ramone was in what glam rock band?
Sniper, I think they're called.
Correct for 15 points. Excellent answer. Next one goes to Katie. Katie, while in Sniper, what was Joey Ramone's name?
Joey?
It was Jeff Starship. Jeff Starship, and he wore a Elvis-like jumpsuit. Next one goes to Jeff. Jeff, Joey Ramone once covered a Sonny and Cher song with what punk/rock artist? Joey Ramone once covered a Sonny and Cher song with what rock/punk artist?
Say Sid Vicious.
I'm afraid that's incorrect, although Joey Ramone did hang out with Sid Vicious once right before he died, believe it or not, along with Jerry Only of the Misfits. The correct answer is Holly Beth Vincent. That's Holly Beth Vincent. And the last one goes to Jay. Jay, Joey Ramone was in a short-lived group with his brother, Mickey Lay. What was the name of that group?
Sibling something, isn't it?
I'm sorry.
No.
What was that answer, Jeff? Say that answer again, please.
Sibling rivalry?
Bam! 15 points for you. That was put on Alternative Tentacles in about 1991, I think. 15 points for Jay. Britt, can we have a point total, please?
Yes. So, leading the pack, we have Dave with 80 points. Our next runner-up is Jay with 35 points, Jeff afterwards with 25 points, and Katie with 20 points.
Well, woo! Excellent. Now, think about how many points you want to wager on the final question. Dave, how many points do you want to wager on the final question?
Wait, you didn't tell him what the final question's about.
Oh, the final category is anarcho-punk rock.
What was the score after mine? 35?
Correct.
And I had 80?
Correct.
I was zero then.
Katie, how many points would you like to wager?
All of them.
Excellent. That's what I like. Daring and risk taking. Jeff, how many points would you like to risk?
23 and a half.
23 and a half. Fair enough. Jay.
You're really making my math hard.
Jay, how many points would you like to risk?
Let's go for all of it.
That's what I'm talking about, Jay. That's what I'm talking about. Okay, so are you all ready to instant message me the answer once I read you the question? You'll have 30 seconds.
You got it.
Okay, the question is, under anarcho-punk the category, Crass put out a series of three compilations all called what? That's Crass put out a series of three compilations all called what? 30 seconds now.
Do, 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 do. Time is up.
Okay, Jeff and Katie, you have a guess that you can send to me real quick.
It says it's pending.
Oh, it is? Okay, I got an answer. Oh, I got it all
just
in.
Now.
Okay, So Dave said Crass music for Crass people. I'm afraid that's incorrect. The answer is Bullshit Detector. That's Bullshit Detector. Katie said, yes, sir, I will, which is an excellent guess, but the answer is Bullshit Detector. Jeff said sandwiches are delicious, especially when served with orange crust, which is true, but the answer is Bullshit Detector. And Jay said translation of Crass. Everyone had a good guess. The answer is Bullshit Detector, which featured such notable bands as Amoebics, Chumbawamba, Let's see, who else? Chaos, Napalm Death, a lot of great bands. And so, Brittany, do we have a final total score?
Yes. So, winning this round, we have Dave with 80 points. Congratulations, Dave.
Ooh. Thank you.
Our next runner-up is Jeff with 1.5 points. Ow! And then Katie and Jay wrap it up with 0 points.
Yeah.
Woo.
Well, thanks all for playing. So, Dave, you won. Dave, one of the gifts we have to give away is The Clash's Live from Here to Eternity. Do you have that?
I do not.
Do you want it?
Yes, please.
Well, fantastic. And also, Katie, Jeff, and Jay, please email me your addresses. We'll send you some prizes just for playing. So thanks very much for playing. Oh, and let's have a hand for everybody that played. They all did a wonderful job. Thanks for playing. So be sure to email me your address, and you'll all get some swag. And thanks again for playing. And we'll see you guys again soon on Punk's Point. And thanks again for listening to the Punk News Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's extra long, extra big, extra blown out podcast with the wonderful Britt Reiser and myself, John Antillian, without Andy Waterfield because he flaked out. Thanks again for listening. We want to thank the bands that we had on. We had Pup, we had Toxic Holocaust, and Britt, what was the band that you played again?
Casket from San Diego. Check them out, folks.
Casket from San Diego. As always, the opinions expressed on the Punk News Podcast, especially the opinions expressed about Lost Profits and the Victory Records lawsuit, are the opinions of the people making them exclusively and do not in any way represent the opinions of punknews.org or any of its affiliates. So if you've got a problem, you can address Britt directly. Don't address me. You can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. And thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week.